A continued good morning to all of you. Well, this particular account that Brother Crow read for us from John chapter 5, it's a little bit of a head scratcher to us sometimes whenever we read this account, because you have this pool of Bethesda here where this angel seems to come and trouble the waters. And essentially the way that it goes is whoever can get in the waters first gets healed. And if you don't get there fast enough, well, you're out of luck. And it's confusing to us maybe, or a bit of a head scratcher, because we don't really read about things like that in other parts of the scripture. Now, the point of the lesson this morning is not to try to diagnose of what is or what isn't with this particular moment concerning that. But the main lesson I take from that, and with any moment like that in Scripture, is to be humble. Because there are so many things that we just don't know in the Bible. We like to know. And we feel comfortable a lot of times as long as we do know. Or as long as things make sense to us. Well, then I could go along with it. I'm okay with it. But whenever I come to moments that I don't know or don't understand, I start to feel uncomfortable. Trust God. Like John tells us that these things which were written down concerning Christ, what did he say? Remember, this is in John chapter 20. He said in verse 30 through 31, "And many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book." And in fact, John in another spot says that if he were to write down everything that Jesus did, that the whole world itself could not contain all the things that had taken place. There are so many things we don't know. But we do know enough. And what's the point? Well, John tells us in the next verse, "But these were written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have life through his name." And that's the point, not just of John's gospel, that's the point of the whole Bible, is to point us to Jesus and to lead us to Jesus. All the other things, well, they'll be made clear to us all in good time whenever we get to stand before the Almighty. For the time being, I'm humbled by what I don't know, and I'm grateful for what I do know, and I'm humbled by that as well, that who is God, who is mindful of man, that he would think of us, and that he would be willing to not only deliver his only begotten Son to us, but also deliver to us his words so we can know how to reach who that is. So we have this pool of Bethesda here, getting back to the text, where Jesus is by this particular pool, and there's this man who is seeking to be healed. Now this, by the way, Bethesda means house of mercy. Anytime you see in the scriptures the phrase Beth, some town or some place named Beth, that means house of. And it's the last part of the word that tells you the house of what. Like Bethel, El, Elohim, that's house of God. Where like Jacob's ladder took place, right? Pool of Bethesda is house of mercy. So whenever you come across a Beth place in your scriptures, well, look it up, see what it means. It probably has something to do with what's going on at that particular place. Whenever we see Jesus there, here with this particular man, this man, as was read for us, has had this issue of not being able to walk for 38 years. It's a long time. It's a long time to be anything. But he has been in this state now for 38 years. And the picture that we have painted is that Jesus, this man now, has set up this little camp by this pool, hoping against hope that somehow he'll make it into the pool so that he can somehow get relief from this particular disease that he has, or this ailment that he has. But this is part of the thing that I think is interesting in this particular account, is that whenever Jesus approaches the man, and he sees the man here, and he sees this man has been in this infirmity for a long time, what does Jesus do? He asks him a question. And what's the question? Do you want to be healed? And that's the question that Jesus asks all of us too. It's the question Jesus always asks. Do you want to be healed? Well, let's just take it for this man here for just a moment. I mean, from a natural man's perspective, what should the answer be? Do you want to be healed? Well, yes, obviously. I got this camp set up here, and I'm sitting here by the pool and such, so the obvious answer will be, yes, I want to be healed. That at least should be the obvious answer for all of us. Yes, I want to be healed. Yes, Lord, I want to follow you. Do you want to be saved? Yes, Lord. Do you want to go to heaven? Yes, Lord. But why would there be any hesitancy? That's part of what we're going to look at. Now, with this particular man here, what does he say? The impotent man answered him and said, "Well, sir, I have no man. When the water is troubled to put me into the pool, while I'm coming, another steppeth down before me." Man's answer, he doesn't answer it directly, but indirectly. Obviously, yes, he wants to be healed is kind of the important. But he says, what does he point toward? What he lacks? I got nobody to help me, Lord. I can't get in the pool. The angel comes, and I'm trying to get there, but I can't get there. Do you hear the resignation in this man's voice? He's resigned to his fate. I would love it, Lord, but ain't going to happen. Can that ever be said of us in our lives? That we feel resigned to our fate? Of course, we're pointing to spiritual things, aren't we? Resigned to where we are in life. What this man points toward here, that he focuses on here, you see, he's focusing on the physical things. The thing that's physically wrong with him, and also then the physical limitations of why he can't be made physically whole. He's physically incapable of doing this. And I'm going to step away from this particular story here for just a moment to kind of talk about that for just a moment of how it is that we have this about us. We have a fleshly side about us, a physical side that we have, but we also have the spiritual side that we have to deal with here in this life. This man is focused entirely on the flesh. And he's focusing on his fleshly limitations. God made us where we have both spirit and bone. We have both spirit and flesh. Whenever Matthew renders the account of Jesus and his disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane, we read this account. If you'll turn with me there in Matthew chapter 26. And you remember what's happening here. So Jesus, as you're turning there, you remember Jesus, he's had the Lord's Supper. That night he instituted the Lord's Supper. Judas is left to betray him. He and his disciples now have gone to the garden. Peter, James, and John have gone on a little further with him. And he has requested them to do what? To wait here and do what for him? Pray. Rest here, wait here, and pray. And he says here in verse 36, again, sit here while I go and pray. And so then he says to them in verse 38, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went on a little further and fell on his face. And there he prays. O Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. He comes back. What does he find? He finds him sleeping, doesn't he? He finds him asleep. And he says, what, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray. Verse 41, that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. And even with Jesus' admonition, you see he goes back and prays. And when he comes back, what does he find? He finds him asleep again. Verse 43, for their eyes were heavy. This time Jesus doesn't wake them, but he leaves them, he goes away, and he prays a third time, and then when he comes back, he wakes them up. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. We all have, so we want to talk about this fleshly side for just a moment, the physical side that we all have to contend with, our own version of palsy, if you will, impotency for a long time maybe. While we are yet here on this life and in this body, we have to contend with the frailty of the flesh, the temptations of the flesh, the limitations of the flesh, the difficulties of the flesh. As Jesus pointed out with his disciples here, did they want to stay up? I think the implication is yes. They wanted to stay up and pray with him. And he says the spirit is weak. But what? The flesh is weak. They couldn't. They couldn't keep doing it. Because they were just too weak to do it at that point. You know, part of the thing that we have to look forward to in heaven, this true rest that we have in heaven, one is that I don't have to contend with the wickedness of the world anymore. I don't have to worry about the pressures of the world and those that are trying to lead me away from Christ. That's part of the rest that I have. But I'll tell you, I think one of the biggest blessings we're going to have as far as rest is concerned, I don't have to contend with myself anymore. I don't have to contend with the fleshly weak side that I have. I don't have to worry about fighting the temptations that I have anymore. Plus, I don't have to be concerned now with the physical limitations of my body anymore. Those of you that are still young and those of you that are still healthy, I mean, part of the thing that you're having to fight day in and day out are those fleshly temptations and such, the lust of the flesh and all of that. As you get older, you're able to master that a little bit more, but what starts to fail? Your body starts to give out, and your body starts to fail just like what Solomon says in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And you feel the evil days drawing nigh. But now whenever you get to be with God, those days are gone. You're no longer tired. You no longer feel weak. You're strong. You feel good once again. This is part of the blessing that God gives us in the glorified body to be with Him and all, for all eternity. The spirit is willing and there is no weak flesh to contend with. What a glorious day that'll be. We get to stand before God in that way and not have to worry anymore. No more tears, no more sorrow, no more crying, but all be made well with Him. But for now, we're here. And we have to contend with the flesh that we have. I want to take you back to an Old Testament story before we come back to John 6. Go to 1 Kings chapter 19 with me. And in this particular account, what do we have? We have one of the oral prophets, not the literary prophets, right? The literary prophets are the prophets that wrote down, right? The literature. This is one of the oral prophets. We have his teaching spoken, the stories written about him. And this is Elijah, the great prophet. And you remember Elijah is a prophet that he just kind of bursts onto the scene. Remember who was reigning? The king and the queen that were reigning? But you do. Ahab and Jezebel. And were those good king? Was he a good king? No, he wasn't. He was a terrible king, right? I mean, that's why Ahab becomes the name of an antagonist in a lot of literature. I mean, we ever read Moby Dick? I mean, he was Ahab. And Jezebel, you don't name your daughter Jezebel. There's a reason for it, right? And it's this story. These are terrible people, horrible people. Elijah's the prophet then who comes on the scene and he just bursts into the king's court and he declares to the king that it will not rain. It is not going to rain, basically until I say so. And then he leaves. And then it just goes on time and time. I can just imagine King Ahab standing there and thinking like, what a nut this is. Days go by, weeks go by, months go by, no rain. 6 months, 8 months, a year. Maybe there was something to what that crazy old Elijah was saying. 3 years go by, finally. Elijah then comes back. And you remember this particular story whenever we get to 1 Kings 18. This is whenever he challenges the prophets of Baal. So he comes back to challenge the prophets of Baal. And this is the showdown at Mount Carmel. Right? all the prophets of Baal are gathered together, and this is the story. It's like, okay, if you want, Elijah says, you get your sacrifice and your altar, I'll get my sacrifice and my altar. You pray to Baal, and then I'll pray to God. And whichever God answers with fire, that's the one who's going to be the true God. And you remember the prophets of Baal, they offer up their sacrifices and everything, and they are dancing and they're singing and they're shouting, and there is nothing to be heard. And I love this story because Elijah then begins to mock them mercilessly. And he says, starts to mock their God Baal, and says, maybe you need to shout louder. Maybe he's off on some far country or some journey. Maybe he's in the room, in the restroom, and he's relieving himself. That's what he says. You maybe don't get that from the King James, but it's there. And so, and they get to the point where they are jumping up and down, cutting themselves, and they just pass out because they're so exhausted. Elijah comes and dumps a huge amount of water on his sacrifice, which again, they've had a drought for 3 years, and he does that. Prays to God one prayer, and it's consumed. He takes the physically exhausted prophets of Baal who can't even stand up anymore, and he has them all killed. And the people shout, and the people declare God as the one true God. Well, the point is that this Elijah has had a huge victory now. And what ends up happening also on this is that the rains return too. Elijah tells Ahab the rains are coming back, and the rains do return. And it's a glorious time. You can just imagine the religious high, the spiritual high that Elijah is on at this moment. The great victory. And that brings us then to chapter 19. What happens? Jezebel now puts out a warrant for his life, like it's never been before, and he has to flee. He has to flee for his life, and he has to run. And it describes that as he is running for his life now, that he wants to give up. So this is at 1 Kings chapter 19. In verse 3 it says, and he, that is Elijah, saw that he had to leave, run for his life. And he arose, he went for his life, and came down to Beersheba, which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. And he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die, and said, it is enough now, O Lord, take my life, for I am not any better than my father's. You see the great swap here, a great switch that's happened here for Elijah. Again, he's just had a great victory, and now all of a sudden, what does he want to do? He wants to give it up. He wants to lay down and die. And he says, Lord, it would be better for me to die at this point. I'm not any better than my fathers who have gone on before me, and I will do no good. You ever felt like that? You ever had a swing of emotion like that even? Felt like things were going great spiritually for you, great in life, and then all of a sudden, complete 180. Notice, this is what I want to get to here. Look at the text here. Verse 5, it continues. And as he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was a cake baking on the coals and a cruse of water at his head. And he did eat and drink and laid him down again. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee. And he arose and did eat and drink, and went in the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the mount of God. What did Elijah need at that moment? Whenever he had declared to God, he said, God, it is better for me to die and to just give it up. I can do no good for you anymore. Did God give him a lecture at that moment? What did God give him? He made him sleep. And then when he got up, what did he do? He gave him some food, and he made him sleep again. And he got him up and gave him some more food. Because that's what he needed. You ever, parents with little ones, you know this. Your kids, you push them to the point where they are tired out of their mind. What can you do for them? They have to sleep. It doesn't. You could give them their favorite toy. In fact, they'll be demanding all of this, of what they need. Oh, Mama, I need this. Daddy, I need to do this. Just let me. They are out of their mind tired. And then what do they need to sleep. You cannot reason with them. They need to sleep. They get like, at least my kids, get hungry like that too. They won't eat. They don't want to eat because they got to play, right? They finally get crazy to the point, not so much now they're older, but still. Finally get to the point where you just got to shove some food down their throat so they'll eat. And all of a sudden, you can kind of see the lights come on. You know what they need. They don't need a lecture. They need to take a nap and they need a snack. That's what they need. Are we any better as adults? Sometimes we're not. That's what Elijah needed at that moment. He needed God to talk to him. He needed God to teach him some things. But at that moment, he wasn't ready to receive it. What he needed was a snack and a nap. And in fact, he needed another snack and another nap. And then he went on to Mount Horeb. And that's that beautiful story where then God presents himself to Elijah, you know, not in the earthquake, not in the sound of the mighty rushing wind or the fire, but in the still small voice. Ah, beautiful story there. There are times we, again, what did Jesus say? The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. We have to contend with the weak flesh. And we kid ourselves, brothers and sisters, whenever we think that we're going to make it through this life with just completely neglecting ourselves physically, that I'm going to still be of good service to God. God shows us and teaches us all throughout the scriptures that we have to contend with this mortal shell and we have to make provision for it if we want to be of good service to Him. And you know this. It's just like if you were to try to stay up all night, Saturday evening, late, and then you come to try to worship God. And there are times that you've had to do this. And what are you doing the whole time? You know, or you're trying to, you can't focus. And you know why? Because you haven't made provision for your weak flesh. And then you're not in any better situation than the disciples where you desire to stay up and pray, but you just can't because your eyes are heavy. We talked this morning in the book of Leviticus, and then we didn't get to go into the Sabbath laws very much, but we touched on it very briefly. But what Jesus teaches us, what is the point of the Sabbath in the old law? The Sabbath was made for what purpose? It was for man, right? Man was not made for the Sabbath. These laws that God made were to help them. They were to have time to rest because they needed it. Because they needed provision for the flesh so they could serve Him. Now, we're not under the old law. So we aren't mandated by God that we have to observe these Sabbath rests like they did. But we have ears to hear and eyes to see. Can we not learn from them? Did not Paul tell us that these things afore are written right for our learning? And those are things that we can learn. I need to take time to take care of myself so that I can serve God the way that I need to. Because if Elijah needed a snack and a nap, there are times that I'm going to need it too. The thing that's interesting too is that after they get this story with Elijah here, and just real quick, what is the pep talk that he gives to Elijah? And I love this question. He asks him twice. He says, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And Elijah goes on and he complains, basically. He's like, "I've been so good for you and these people are terrible. And there's nobody left but me." Twice he asks him, "Why are you doing here? What are you doing here?" And the Lord finally, the Lord's setting him up for the lecture. The Lord's setting him up for the answer. Where he says to him, "You're not the only one. There are 7,000 others. Get over yourself." And he tells him, "Get up and go and do." That's basically the summation. This isn't just about you. Get up, go and do. You're not the only one. There's no temptation which comes our way, which overtakes us, right? And then we have to deal with, which is not common to man. And there is no temptation and no tribulation that comes our way which God will not make provision for us, that there may be a means of escape for us. Remember that. We just have to be discerning enough and wise enough to be able to take that escape that God has given us and be content with the door He opens for us. Sometimes that's the problem. Sometimes we don't want to go through that door. We think it should be a different one. But that's a fleshly way of thinking. That's a complaining way of thinking. Not being spiritually minded. But see, it's a similar question to what we're getting at here. What are you doing here? Why are you here? Do you want to be made whole? So let's go back to our story now. Again, Jesus has made the statement to His disciples before we get there. Again, what did He say to His disciples? Why they need to be caring? Watch and pray that indeed you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Make provision. Be wise. You know yourself so that you don't set yourself up for failure because your flesh is weak. Watch and pray. Here it is. The spirit indeed is willing. It was for them, but this is where we're getting to the question here. Is your spirit willing? Do you want to be healed? Do you want to be made whole? Is your spirit willing? That's what we're getting to right here, my friends. Do you want to follow Jesus? Do you want to go to heaven? Part of the balance now we have as Christians, as being called to being servants of the Most High and having our gaze now heavenward, is though yes, we have to deal and contend with the flesh, we can't become distracted by it. You see, there's the balance we have to have with it. Because even though I'm having to contend with this mortal shell, my eyes, my gaze never, never stops looking to my Lord. So when Jesus asked me, do I want to be made healed? Do I want to go to heaven? I have to stop and think for just a moment. What my Lord tells me is what is going to be required of me. You remember the story of the rich young ruler. He comes to Jesus and he says, you know, Master, good Master, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Remember what Jesus tells him? He gives him commandments, right? Honor your father and mother. Don't steal. Don't covet. Right? It's interesting in that particular story that that's what the commandments that Jesus focuses on. He doesn't list all of them. But he just focuses on those that have to do with how you treat other people. And the rich young ruler, you remember what he says. He says, oh, well, goodness, I've done that from my youth up. And then what does Jesus tell the rich young ruler? You remember, sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and follow me. And the rich young ruler, he went away sorrowful. Why? Because he had many possessions. And what is the gospel writer implying with that? And he loved those possessions and he wanted to keep them. You see already how Jesus was laying the groundwork with the commandments that he asked him about? When he said, you got to keep these commandments, he didn't list all of them. You got to keep all the commandments. But Jesus focused on the love your neighbor as yourself commandments because he knew that this young man's problem was. There is a cost to serving Jesus. There is a cost to get to heaven. And what is it? Ourselves. We have to give up of ourselves. So what is it in your life that would hold you back? Do you want to be made whole? Well, yeah. And if that follows up with a but sort of statement, you don't really want to be made whole. Remove the buts. And the only one who can help you with that is Jesus. That's what Jesus is trying to get us to see here. Because, you know, we can become very settled in our life. 38 years, this is what this man's life has been. It's a life that, as you look at it, This is a great painting, by the way. I can't remember who painted it, but you can see somebody. If you look it up, you can see the man's look on his face and such. It's quite beautiful. But as you look at it from the outside as the observer, what do you see? A man in a pitiful state. I mean, he's laying there in his own filth, can't get up, can't do anything, laying out in the elements, the bugs, and all of that. We can see that in other people's lives. We can see the state of the situation. And we can ask ourselves, why would they live like that? Why would they stay in that sin? Why would he keep going back to the bottle? Why would he keep doing that to his family? Why would she keep acting that way? We can see it. But whenever you're in it, and it's you, you may be able to see it. You may be able to say, I know it's a mess. I don't want this. But you become so comfortable and so settled in it that you resign to it and you say, yeah, it's a mess, but it's my mess. It's familiar to you. It's the life that you've come to expect. This man knows what every day is going to be until he finally dies. And it can be very comfortable to live like that. What's tomorrow going to be? He's going to be right here. Angel may come, probably not. You know, it may come, but I'm not going to make it to the water, probably not. What's it going to be like 3 years from now? 5, 10, if he lives that long, he'll be the same. And kind of what we got back to the first part of the lesson, we find comfort, erroneous comfort, in feeling like we know and we expect things to happen a certain way. Jesus calls us into something different, a new life and a better life, and that can be uncomfortable for us at times, depending on how we've lived our lives. This is why it's so important there, like in Ecclesiastes 12, we mentioned that earlier. What's the point there, really? Remember God in your youth before the evil days draw nigh. There is a great blessing you have. If you remembered God in your youth, if you were blessed to have parents or grandparents who taught you how to serve God and they set you up for success, you adhered to it, there is a great blessing in that. And that's why you need to do that for these little ones, for your kids. Set them up for success. So that as they grow older, they're not having to contend with some of the same issues that people of the world are having to contend with. The temptations are there, but they have the wisdom to deal with it, or it's not as big of a draw to them because you've trained them. And any of you that weren't blessed to have that, you know what we're talking about. Any of you that have ever been caught up in addiction, you know what we're talking about. The very thing you hate, you keep going back to. Jesus calls us to something different, something better. And again, we're not just talking about our physical dwelling. We're really talking about our spiritual dwelling, our spiritual life, to be made whole for Him. Do you want to be saved? Do you want to be healed? Then give yourself to Jesus and let Him do it. Because what does Jesus say to this man? Rise, take up thy bed and walk. What Jesus has done is He has removed all the excuses that this man has. Get up, rise, take up your bed and walk. Set things in order and go on. Kind of like with Elijah. Get up, Elijah. Go and do. Do my will. My friend, if you want to be made whole and be healed by Jesus Christ, He's the one who's laid the groundwork for you. We just observed that a few moments ago. We sang about it. We prayed about it. Jesus Christ died on that cross so that you might be made clean, so that you might be made whole. He came down here and dwelt amongst men, and He suffered and died for us. And in that garden that we read about, He did all of that. Why? For you and for me. So that it would be made possible that we could be made whole. And it's about being spiritually whole, isn't it? You know, all the miracles of Jesus, they all point toward spiritual healing, sins being forgiven, right? That's what the real blessing is. And so, my dear friend, if you want to be made whole and you want to be healed, all you have to do is accept the gift that Jesus offers to you today and be like this man. And immediately, the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. There's a whole other lesson right there. You can be made whole immediately now. Your sins can be forgiven. Now that doesn't mean that if this has been your life for a long time, that doesn't mean that there won't be some cleaning up to do. You're going to have to take up your bed. And God's not going to do that for you, but He'll help you. And that means there's going to be some healing that has to take place in your life. That means there's going to be some purging that has to take place. There's going to be some rearranging that has to take place, right? You're going to have a different life now, like what Peter says. If the Gentiles, they will say, your former friends will say, why do you no longer run along with us in the same way that you used to? What's different about you? And they will despise you for it. But you have wasted enough time, Peter says, in living in that way. So live differently now for Jesus. God will help you. And I know you have all of these people here to help you. You have all of these people here to help you as you run along that way. And there's the other point, my friend. Surround yourself by people in your life so that this never becomes an issue for you. You always have people there who are going to help you, because let us not be so prideful to think that none of us will ever get to a state in our spiritual walk where we won't need some friends to pick us up and help get us to Jesus again so we can be healed. But wherever you are this morning, wherever your spiritual walk is, the question that he asks us all is, do you want to be made whole? So my friend, do you want to be made whole this morning? Jesus gives you a choice. And he's willing to abide by that choice. What do you choose? Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?
You've been to Jesus.